Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Tejas Networks Q1 FY23 results conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Sanjay Nayak, MD and CEO. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, and good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tejas Networks Q1 earnings call. We had uploaded our presentation on the website, so I hope you had a chance to download it or at least are able to see it, because we will be following the presentation slide by slide. I'm on the first slide, which is the key updates for Q1 FY23. Our net revenues for the quarter were 126 crores. We had a PAT loss of 7 crores. Cash and cash equivalent at the end of our quarter was 1,739 crores, and of course, we do not have any debt at this stage. Our order book at the end of Q1 stands at 1,158 crores. In terms of major things that really determine the quarter, we continue to have challenges in supply chain, so we wanna talk a little bit about that. Basically, we could not ship adequate systems in complete form because of imbalanced inventory that was created due to shortage of certain components, despite us having placed adequate purchase orders well in advance to our suppliers. There are challenges in the global industry, and we have, you know, been continuing to be impacted by that. Specifically, what we have done is we've really analyzed all the things which are happening in the supply chain. Based on our assessment of what we need to do differently going forward, we are making changes in our internal processes and IT tools to better understand the current challenges and ensure more predictable deliveries. Essentially, our business model was a very light touch, asset-light manufacturing, where we gave out all our orders to our contract manufacturers, and they in turn used to place the orders for the components and so on, and assemble everything and give it back to us. What we found out is that just for us to get much more predictability and control, because we are getting too many last-minute surprises, now we have upgraded our systems where we can have complete visibility into all the components which have been ordered by our EMS suppliers and what the status of arrivals of those things are, and really be able to make much better informed manufacturing decisions. This, you know, fundamental systems and processes upgrade that we have done in the quarter, we expect should, you know, start getting better results, as we go forward in the rest of the year. The other impact of supply chain for us has been that component costs have increased continually over the past 2 years. We are able to buffer some of it in terms of new contracts, but many of the deals which were fixed price, for example, tender deals which were rupee denominated and fixed price in India, we do not have any opportunity to increase the prices to our customers. As a result, our gross margins have definitely been adversely impacted. This is again a situation which we feel that towards the later part of this year should start improving. As of now, we do have these challenges on the supply chain side. In terms of overall corporate update, as you would have read in the press release a couple of weeks back, we have inducted two new independent directors on our board. Professor Bhaskar Ramamurthy, who till recently was the director of IIT Madras, and also the person who's in charge of the 5G lab that was set up at IIT Madras, has joined our board. Mr. P.R. Ramesh, the former chairman of Deloitte India, has also joined our board. The second thing which we have completed as of recently is 63.43% shares of Saankhya Labs have been acquired. As of July 1, Saankhya Labs has become a subsidiary of Tejas Networks. We already started the integration process between the R&D teams and different other programs. The impact of all of this would be seen in terms of accelerating our 5G radio program in line with you know, the market expectations of when things will be required. The last thing I wanted to highlight was that in last quarter, the Department of Telecom announced a variant of the PLI scheme, which is called Design-Led Manufacturing, and that provides an additional 1% incentive on top of what was available. But most importantly, from an investment perspective, and especially capital investment perspective, they have allowed R&D manpower costs to be counted. The net effect of all of that is that the amount of capital commitments we can make comfortably to get advantage of this new design-led manufacturing scheme will be significantly higher than what we had got approval earlier. And the second thing the Department of Telecom has also allowed is to shift the block of 5 years in which we will, you know, get this incentive. So while we were eligible to get incentive in this because of our investment in the last financial year, based on our revenue profile, which we think will be, you know, increasing over the next 4 or 5 years, we have decided not to avail the incentive of last year, and we will start the block of 5 years from this year. So the effect of these two would be, I would say, significantly higher PLI incentive that we will get after we are able to, you know, get our current application upgraded to larger capital commitment because of R&D manpower resources being allowed. And secondly, higher revenues because of the next 4 or 5 years, we expect that our revenue profile would significantly be on the upswing compared to what it was in the last financial year. So that's a quick summary of the overall quarter. And again, as I mentioned, even in the last quarter, we are not comfortable and excited about the fact that we are continuing to struggle through the supply chain challenges. But we now do believe that combination of advanced ordering, combination of, you know, upgrading internal tools, processes, and, you know, just, you know, a little bit better support from these component suppliers should allow us to make sure that the rest of the year we don't see the hiccups that we have seen in Q1 as well. I'm now on the next slide in terms of the details about the financial update. So as I mentioned, the revenues are for Q1 are 125.8 crores, which was a year-on-year decline of 12.8% compared to last financial year. EBIT was minus 30.7 crores. Again, that's a year-on-year decline. PBT was again declined, PBT was again negative at minus 12.9. PAT was minus 6.6, and EPS was minus 0.45. Basically, as you all know, we do not view our business on a quarterly basis. We look at it on an annualized basis. And while Q1, because of the revenue shortfall, correspondingly resulted into a PAT loss. As I mentioned, the two other impacts which we have had is the gross margin pressure continued, where we could not, get improvements in the gross margin. So we are almost at the same level as Q4 of last year. And I expect that only when the year progresses, we could potentially see improvement. But at least that's the situation that we have today. The other thing I want to mention is on the expense side, especially on the R&D investment side. We have not, despite the fact that Q1 was not a good quarter in terms of revenue, we have continued to make sure that all the R&D investments which are required to accelerate our wireless product development, in particular, both the 4G program that we are working with BSNL and the 5G program for the overall market, doesn't get impacted. So in that sense, the expenses and the commitments to investment from the R&D and manufacturing side continue, and we expect that as the year progresses, the revenues will also catch up with respect to our investment plan. Continuing on the next slide on the financials, because of the imbalanced inventory situation, our inventory increased almost by 35 to 40 crores to 322 crores. Because again, you know, we have imbalanced systems. It means many of the cards have come, but just because some could not come because of specific component shortages, we could not complete the system. But we do again expect that as the inventory start getting balanced out, the inventory level should come down. Receivables are 298 crores. We collected around 141 crores during the quarter. We also collected some money from BSNL, which we had provided for in Q4 of last year during this quarter. Working capital, because of the higher inventory level, primarily increased by 47 crores, and the cash position increased to 1739 crores because Panatone Investments converted the Series A warrants and invested 712.5 crores in the company. So as a result, on the cash side, we are comfortable and we are making investments in line with that, our long-term vision of what we want to achieve. Clearly in the Q1, because of revenue shortfall, we have, inventory increases as well as working capital increases. Going to the next slide, in terms of the sales summary. So We have two pie charts. These are all the same formats we have been sharing in the past. So the pie chart on the left-hand side shows the breakup between the three segments of the business that we had in last financial year. And the pie chart on the right-hand side shows the investment, shows the revenue breakup by the customer segment that we track. So the run rate business, which is India private plus international, contributed to 80% of our Q1. India government was 20% of Q1, which was a growth compared to last year. In addition, we have won a few large tenders, multi-hundred crore tenders, which are expected to convert into purchase orders in Q2. India private was 49% of the total revenues, and we did see a year-on-year growth for 21.5%. This is a segment of the business which continues to do well. As you all know, that the India government business is a little bit dependent on the tenders and when they actually execute, but private continues to do well for us. International was not, compared to last, Q1 of last financial year, was down around 48%, although as a total, it is almost in line, a little bit shorter than the overall year average. In terms of closing backlog, the revenue, so the orders from India constitute around 986 crores, and the backlog of orders from international is around 172 crores. Going to the next slide, this is just a pictorial view of all the different products and the different segments that we are having our focus on. So on the wireline products, which is our steady state business, which has been continuing to grow healthily, we have got the optical transmission, the broadband access, as well as the secured Ethernet IP switches, which are used for safe cities, smart cities, and those applications. So that part of the business, in terms of run rate as well as new order wins, continues to be doing quite well. The wireless products are the new products, which is constituting of the 4G radio access network, or base stations as we loosely call them, both for fixed as well as mobile. And we have successfully completed the 4G trials with 4G proof of concept trials with in the BSNL network. The 5G radios and the satellite communication is something that we have acquired from Sankhya Labs, and we are integrating all of those as a part of our integrated product portfolio. So a lot of the new investments in terms of R&D is going into the 4G and 5G program on the wireless side, while we'll continue to invest on an incremental basis on the wireline business, which already has a fairly competitive portfolio of products, and will continue to grow healthily as a business. So in a sense, wireline business continues to be on a growth and profitable mode, and wireless business at this stage is really in the investment mode. But we do expect that the wireless revenues, especially of the larger kind, could start hitting our revenue sooner, in which case both those business will be independently growing. So in summary, I'm on the last slide now. Q1 was a weak quarter because of revenue shortfall, specifically because of the component shortages where we could not balance the inventory and ship. And we have taken corrective actions which were not originally planned for, because the supply chain model in the normal situation was working well with our EMS doing everything. But we just have to do a little bit more planning and forecasting on our side. And those processes and systems internally have been changed, and we expect to have a better management and lesser surprises from our supply chain going forward. Order book is healthy. We also have a very strong visibility of new order inflows, and hence we expect to accelerate our quarterly revenue growth during the rest of the financial year. On an overall year basis, we still feel confident of significant growth compared to last year. With the success of proof of concept for our 4G RAN, we are also well positioned to scale our wireless business and achieve potentially large size orders for which commercial discussions are on. We are also making R&D investment as well as scaling up our manufacturing operations. Again, we will continue to be in the asset light mode, but whether it's processes, people, systems, tools, test equipment, capabilities, all of that is being done to ensure that as our business scales up significantly in a short period of time, we are ready to actually do manufacturing for those products. We are also continuing to watch the lead times in the industry and taking proactive inventory actions, and have coverage for almost next 12 months of revenues in terms of confirmed orders to our suppliers. We already talked about the constitution of the board, which will again continue to make sure that we have a very good set of people to direct us. And from a cash perspective, again, we have a good position so that we can take long-term view of our business and continue to focus on things that over the next few years will ensure that our company grows at a much higher pace than we have done in the past. I would pause right now and actually make it more interactive and open up the floor for questions. So we can just start the question and answer session now. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on your touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Hiren Kumar Thakural Desai, an individual investor. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. I have two questions, one short-term and one slightly longer-term. The first one is, our order backlog was 1186 crore, I think, at the end of Q4. It has declined, and the revenue this quarter is 125 crore. So, have we either seen some order cancellation or the order accretion in this quarter has been low? That's the first question.
Okay.
Yeah,
you want Hiren, you want me to answer one by one, or you want to put the second question as well first?
Yeah, the second question is related to the longer term, that it has been about a year since Tata invested in Tejas. And I assume that the idea is to grow non-linearly, right? I mean, significantly grow. So what is the concrete plan of utilizing the cash that is there? Because I assume that at around 600-700 crores of revenue, kind of we are break-even and self-sustaining. So this money, what is our plan to sort of increase investment, or how to non-linearly increase our revenue?
Sure. So let me start with the first question. No, we did not have any order cancellation in Q1, except that some of the large orders that we were supposed to get in the form of purchase orders crossed the quarter boundary, so they could not come in. So as such, could have had a much higher Q1. I would say that the order inflow business win continues to be strong. Yes, Q1, specifically was the new order inflow was slightly lower than the revenue that we did, and hence the backlog decrease. But that's one point. So as far as the year is concerned, we still continue to believe that the new order inflows and the win ratio is very strong, and we do not have any concern on the cancellation side. The second question that you said, which is correct, that Tata has now almost invested for a year. We do have plans to grow non-linearly. In fact, we have AGM tomorrow where we'll also, of course, be also sharing some of those thought processes along with the new chairman. But the point is very simple. We believe that our industry in telecom equipment is an industry of scale. Unless we get into top tier category among the global players, we will not have the economies of scale to really be able to play very large. So in that side, we are basically doing three things in terms of the broad strategy, which I articulated, I think, in one of the earlier earnings calls. Number one is to expand the product portfolio. So while optical and wireline products, we are very strong, we believe that with the wireless 4G and 5G things that we are doing, it expands the market for us. Because in India, which is a market, we do see large opportunities of this kind which are coming together. And part of the Sankhya Labs acquisition was to make sure that product completeness wide, we have the breadth of portfolio that is required. Part of that strategy was that all OEMs in the world, we have seen a lot of the analysis, is something that they start getting a lot of success of large kind in their home markets. And hence we are thinking that with all the direction that the government of India is having and the opportunities that we are seeing for the new CapEx cycle in India between 5G and 4G for BSNL and of course the FTTX, there's a large home market opportunity which we want to maximize and use that opportunity to get to global scale. So that is the second part of the strategy to really make sure that in the near term, in the next 24 months or so, we really start getting into large deals in the home market. And then third part of strategy was really to use the Tata ecosystem to get into international markets, starting from expanding in the geographies where we are, but more importantly, getting into accounts where we earlier did not have access to, working either as a solution partner or using the relationship that exists to get to that. So I would say the strategy is quite clear, except that the execution and the outcome of that strategy we expect will be visible to the investors as this and next year progresses. But a lot of those signs of that we hope should be visible in this year itself.
Okay, but Sanjay, that still doesn't clearly answer the large amount of cash that we have.
Yeah, so
about how you are going to use.
Yeah. So the large amount of cash will be used for three purposes. Number one, it gives us the cushion to increase investments into R&D. Number two, it gives us an opportunity to scale up our business in much larger play and be able to take longer bets, whether it's in supply chain, whether it's in securing business of large kinds or making international sales investments. And number three, it also gives us the ability that as and when we see opportunities to acquire candidates, companies, we should be able to do that. Without having the cash position that we have today, our ability to take any of these three long-term calls gets dramatically diminished. And we're working we have now, N.G. Subramaniam as our chairman. So we're working closely with him and trying to implement our long-term vision into actions as we go along.
Okay, just to follow up, is there anything on the radar in terms of acquisition?
We don't have anything that we can talk about, but the purpose is that the cash is available for both organic as well as inorganic methods.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Mr. Sanket from Kedia Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes,
hello.
Please.
Yeah, good evening, sir. Yeah, just wanted to understand like what gives us confidence that the supply chain pressure will ease out in the coming year or in next couple of years also, because the same has been prolonging since last 1 year. And that has been impacting our results quarter after quarter. So how do we make sure we are self-sustainable to profitability?
So first of all, you are absolutely right that we had expected the supply chain issues to have been behind us by now for sure. And unfortunately, they are not. So we basically have been diving deeper into the core issues and really fixing one by one. So at a macro level, if you talk to anybody in the semiconductor industry, at least related to the telecom products or the chips of the kind of chips that we buy, the general consensus is that till the end of this year, things are not going to be changing too much. So for example, if you place an order of on any component supplier, you may get a 52-week lead time as a committed lead time. So that is the situation that is available from a discussion that we have with the supplier. But even for that, to be honest, we had actually taken inventory action with more than 52 weeks of lead time. But why are we still not able to do the revenues that we planned for? And that is really when we figured out that the EMS companies that we have been working with, the way they have been operating and certain kind of things that they have been trying to optimize around, did not suit the current situation where the lead times are longer. And it was very important and crucial for us to get to the second and third level of details of their systems and processes, integrate them into our IT systems and be able to predictably say where exactly which component which is short and which EMS, have they placed the order on time, what is the accepted arrival date and why, you know, we cannot pull that in, etc., etc. So I think the internal processes and systems is something which took us a little bit longer to realize and implement, but I think we have done that as well. So the combination of the two, I feel that, which I mentioned earlier, that we placed orders for the next 12 months of, you know, our requirements, gives us comfort that if we are able to better manage our suppliers, essentially, we should be in a fine shape going forward, is our understanding.
But do we have the pricing power, like you mentioned, in certain orders we are not able to right now to pass on the pricing as these are domestically built? So going forward also, would we have the pricing power or our margins would be reduced or compromised?
So I think in the normal situation, there are two kinds of businesses that we participate in. One is the tender business, where if we had bid in a tender, say, 2 years back, and we had won it, say, then, you know, it was awarded to us, say, let's say, a year back. The pricing power in those deals doesn't exist with us because it's a fixed price deal. It was a, you know, rupee-based thing, and there's very little we could do to change that. Any new customer that we are bidding or in new tender we are bidding or any rate contracts with existing customers, including large customers of ours, when we are renewing, they understand the situation because all other suppliers are also, you know, using the price escalation to pass it on to them. So to those kind of people, we have been able to pass on the price escalation. Now the question is, how much of a large, how much of a blend of the business will happen between new orders where we increase the price versus old orders where we have price pressure. The answer is that since we do have a large backlog of last year, some of it, a lot of it is also fixed rupee price. At least for a quarter or two, we will see a little bit of a margin pressure till the situation on the supply chain eases off. And answer to that is that we should have larger revenues to be able to absorb a slightly lower gross margin, so that on an overall basis, we can still be achieving profitability.
And with respect to the DLI incentive which you have mentioned about, can you quantify this? Like, what would be the additional benefit to us in the longer term?
So yes, so in the earlier scheme, we had applied for around 105 crores of investment, which would have given us up to 3.8 times of incentives. We are in the process of upgrading our earlier PLI application to a much larger investment commitment, which would potentially mean, we could get up to 3.8 times our capital investment back in the form of incentives. Plus, we get an extra percentage of, so we'll have two benefits from the new design link manufacturing scheme. One is we will, have a much larger capital commitment because R&D manpower is now allowed, without actually having to invest significantly differently than what we would have normally done. And secondly, that larger commitment will give us an opportunity that as our revenue scale much more than what we had originally planned for when we had applied last year, we should be able to get the incentive on a larger revenue amount. And then the third part is that we will get an extra 1% incentive because we will meet the validation criteria that has been prescribed in the new DLI scheme for our products. So this is how I think the new scheme will, or rather the new application will benefit us going forward.
Thanks for answering all the questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tejas Seth from Nippon India AMC. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, Sanjay. What is the status on the BSNL order now?
Tejas, I think as you would have been, reading in the newspaper, so the technical aspect of concluding the proof of concept trials is going well. So our equipment has been in the field for now quite some time, and things have progressed quite well, and the customer seems to be satisfied with the technical capabilities of the products. In terms of the commercials, those discussions are on between the front-end system integrator and BSNL. The size of the deal and the price is something that is being worked out. As soon as those commercials close, which we expect should close in this quarter, we would get better visibility in terms of the timelines of the orders and the delivery timeline that we'll have to give for those orders. All of that is work in progress, and so far things are going in the right direction.
Okay. Now with world travel opening up, considering that we've been suffering from getting international order because we've not been able to travel, is there we have hired any talent to boost up our international orders?
That's a good point because travel is opening up and we are seeing things scale up internationally. I mean, we will definitely be making more investments in our international sales from two different angles. In certain geographies where we have been directly addressing the market, those geographies are to be having more investments, and we should start seeing the result of that with a time gap of couple of quarters. In the U.S. market, we believe that a partnership approach with either other group companies or with other OEMs that we have done in the past might be a faster way for us to accelerate. We will be revamping the U.S. market with that kind of a strategy again, based on the internal strategy discussions we've been having. I would say that international should start ramping up. However, I must also say that I mentioned earlier that we do see very large opportunity in the home market in India across customers. We also want to make sure that we do not miss out on those opportunities to scale our business and at least get to high economies of scale in the shortest possible time.
Okay. Has the ball started rolling on working with the group companies, or it is something which is just on paper as of now?
No, the ball has started rolling. We have been interacting in terms of different applications, different geographies, some sales models that will work. I think it will just take a little bit of time to get the first success internationally. That's something that I would say multiple engagements across multiple geographies are on.
Okay. On the product offering side, is there anything which we are looking to achieve over the next, let's say, 12 to 24 months?
Yes. In fact, we have planned to achieve a lot, by the way. Number one, we want to make sure that a very robust 4G system can be delivered for large-scale deployment, not just in India, but many parts of the world, especially in emerging markets, still don't have a 4G, like India doesn't have 4G in many pockets. I think we see that's a good opportunity. A robust, field-proven 4G system is something that will happen in the next 12 months in terms of large-scale deployment. 5G radios that we have been producing and the 5G Open RAN solution that we've been producing, again, we believe should be qualified by customers by the end of this calendar year and should be ready for commercial deployment in the next calendar year as well. So these two products alone would open up a very large new addressable market in terms of the wireless side of things, which we really have been just kind of playing on the fringes so far. And that is the reason I mentioned that in terms of the R&D investments, we are significantly upgrading that. The third element in terms of new product deployment would be through the Sankey acquisition, they have an application for 5G for broadcast application, which is for people who have a TV spectrum who could use that for broadcast on 5G. So they are again working with one of the anchor customers, and we believe that in the next 12 to 18 months, some more applications of broadcast 5G across larger customer operators around the world can open up. So I would say there's a lot of, a huge amount of product development and product, capabilities are, coming out in the company. Just to put all of this in perspective, we are trying to do in, let's say, 2 years, what typically takes five times or 10 times as much more time on a global, compared to the global competitors against whom we are now competing. So in that sense, these are all very, very complex technologies, require a huge amount of field hardening because they have a direct to the user experience. So for example, if you have a mobile network or, your user experience on the network should be no different then you would build a network using any other multinational company's product who've been in this business for 20 years or maybe longer. Same thing for, you know, our fiber to the home products, for example, which continue to be doing quite well in many of the operators in India and abroad. So net-net, I would say significant focus on R&D. A lot of resources are needed. A lot of investments is needed. The supply chain situation, even for rapid prototyping, you know, is making it difficult to launch products faster than what we would have otherwise done. But all I can say is that a lot of investments is happening in the right direction and things are all coming together in a very satisfactory manner.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tejas.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sangameshwar Iyer from Coliseum. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello. Hi, Sanjeev.
Hi, Sangam.
Hi. Sanjeev, I just wanted to check with you. You know, the slowdown that we are talking about in the semiconductor industry, is that having an impact on the overall fresh order intake that we are seeing? Because like one of the earlier participants asked, the order inflow during the quarter was actually much lower than what we have been seeing in the past few quarters. So does this have anything to do with a conscious decision to slowly take orders because of the rising input prices? Or could you elaborate a bit more as in, you know, what's led to this slowdown?
Yeah, so first of all, as I mentioned to the in answer to that question, was that I would not read too much into the order in so far Q1. As I said, subsequent to the quarter close alone, we have, you know, got significantly large orders. So in that sense, in my mind, you know, there's no really slowdown in the business momentum. In that sense, it's quite healthy. I don't think, by the way, on the contrary, the situation is slightly different. If we had been able to ship out all the stuff that we have backlog of, we can definitely have secured a lot more orders. So I would say that we could have accelerated our growth, but we are limited a little bit by the current situation in supply chain. So that's the way I would put it.
Secondly, you know, in the past few con calls, we did always mention that, you know, we have been trying to get or garner critical components that would be required and to make sure that, you know, shortfalls do not occur. But, you know, even Q4 and Q1, we have seen that few critical components still elude us and resulting in us not meeting our internal targets as well in terms of, you know, fulfilling customer orders, etc. So, you know, this new initiative that you spoke about, wherein, you know, you are trying to integrate the supply chain of the vendors along with yours to make sure that, you know, orders are, you know, received on time or fulfilled on time. How long do you think that this will take in terms of a gestation period before, you know, this thing formalizes and you are able to, you know, take complete control of the whole chain?
So good question, Sangam. So what we have essentially, so there are two effects which had hurt us, to be honest. The first effect, as you rightly said, that certain specific components are under what is called allocation basis, which means and then these are very large companies, by the way, I'm talking about. So they are only able to get X amount of components of that kind available from their foundry or semiconductor foundry who is manufacturing that. And the same X amount of components are being, quote-unquote, allocated to different, system companies like ourselves, right? So, A, the problem was to get the maximum share of the allocation for those components. And so if some of those components go across many products, that is really where the efficiency that I talked about comes. So assume we are able to get, say, 1,000 components allocated, and those 1,000 components are used across 20 different cards that we produce in the company. If you do not do a good job of balancing the use of those 1,000 components, we may have, by the way, a requirement of 1,000 components on all of those cards. You know, so we can consume it on 10 cards, or we can consume it on 50 different cards or whatever. So I think what was happening is the optimization, I'm just simplifying the problem for you, it's much more complex than that. The optimization of the scarcely available component onto different cards and balancing the inventory was not done being appropriately. So the second part of the problem is what is the new thing that we have solved, at least in terms of the tools, processes, and systems now. We believe that whatever components are available, we'll be able to do a much better job of allocating them internally and getting more systems out of the door. The first part of it in terms of getting higher portion of components from our suppliers, that's an ongoing discussion. Even as late as last week when we met some of the suppliers who are visiting India, we have highlighted the importance of them supporting Tejas, we hope that going forward we should get a better allocation of such components. But that's the summary of what has changed, and our assessment is that the results of whatever we have done should start being visible from this quarter onwards in terms of better performance on the revenue side.
Okay, as a follow up, if you were to backtest these tools and systems that you are putting in place with your vendors currently, what kind of efficiency could you have achieved in the last couple of quarters? Do you think that instead of 125 crore run rate, you could have clocked 175 to 200 crore run rate, given better efficient utilization of the tools that of the components that were available? I'm just trying to analyze the situation in terms of how much was the shortfall on the internal basis and how much was it because of the external factors which affected everybody.
It's hard to quantify that because one is connected to the other. So as time goes by, of course, the aging of the orders of those components on our suppliers is higher. So the chances of them getting fulfilled now is better. Clearly, as I articulated, that the allocation of those components within the system for us, could be done better. So it's a little bit hard to quantify what happened in the past. But what we do know that, as I mentioned at the end of the Q4 call, that we actually had coverage for all the orders that we have for the whole year in advance, so we should get those components during the year. So the only thing which we are focusing on right now is that going forward, as much of efficiency as we can draw into the system should be put in, and we should start seeing tangible output, because we do want to make sure that customer orders don't get so late that customers start getting concerned about our ability to deliver. And that is something which we are keeping at a high priority.
Got it. And last question from my end. Given that in a lot of your orders are international orders, currency depreciation does kind of offset a little bit in terms of the input cost increase, etc. But how much of an escalation in the input cost can be passed through, and how much do we have to absorb?
It's a dynamic situation, because depending on which customer do you ship that quarter and what was the profile of that customer, was it at the new price or at the old price, I think our margins keep changing. As you rightly picked also that in Q1, our percentage of international was lower and our backlog of international actually is still very high. So I think in general, our international margins are better than the Indian margins. So as we decongest those orders, we expect to see improvement at least in the blend of the margin as well.
So, but is there a pass-through available in terms of cost escalation beyond a certain level in all those international orders?
So the way it works, it's not a direct pass-through. It's more like a competitive situation with that customer. So at any point in time, suppose you increase the price by X percentage or 20, Y percentage or whatever, it's for the customer. It's an ongoing, discussion with the customer. What is the thing which you can pass on to him while still being competitive? And it's always a push and pull. But even with large customers in India, we had been able to do the price escalation for certain kind of products for sure, and certain others it was a little bit more difficult. But there's no one fixed rule that we can pass X percentage to all the things. I know where you're coming from. Like, for example, in auto industry, people are able to say, okay, I'm going to pass X percentage price increase on all models of this kind, right? Unfortunately,
right,
our industry is a little bit more fragmented, and it's a mix of products, mix of customers. Where are you on the radar screen with respect to competitive situation, which comes into play before we... of course, the intent is to pass as much as we can and to push back as much as we are getting from our suppliers. But, you know, supplier side, I think, to be honest, we have not that much leverage at this stage, because if we are able to, if we have to prioritize between securing components at slightly higher cost versus, just trying to stick to our margins, so we are prioritizing, getting the components. So we have to pay a little bit of spot premium or whatever, we are doing that. But to the customers, to the maximum we can pass, we are doing it while being competitive.
Okay. All the best, Sanjay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Mukul Garg from Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Hi, Sanjay. Good evening.
Hi, Mukul.
Sanjay, sorry if this was asked earlier because I missed some part of the call. But can you just help with the view on the component shortage easing? We have seen some companies, especially in the NAND space, come out and talk about normalization happen at a faster rate. Which part of your component supply chain is still seeing stretched delivery timelines? And what's your view that by when will things go back to a normalized run rate what it was pre-COVID for you in terms of the supply?
Mukul, if I look at the categories of components where we are having the highest lead time today, surprisingly, is not the Class A large cost chips. It is basically power components, for example, clocks, powers, and things like that, the analog kind of components, which basically on an average may cost, few cents to, a couple of dollars, single digit dollars, right? These are the components which are currently giving the maximum grief in terms of a category of components. Second one after that is that certain programmable devices of a certain nanometer geometry is in a serious short supply, because there are only two programmable device guys in the world. Both of them outsourced their manufacturing to, there was one in Taiwan and one in Korea. The Korea guy basically used that capacity for their internal, so basically that capacity got dried up. There was only one, foundry which was manufacturing these programmable devices. If you talk to anybody in the industry today, from the largest OEM whom he works with to the us, certain of those devices are under a serious short supply. And actually, because of our programmable architecture, we do have a significant dependency on those kind of chips. So that's the second category. The third category of chips, I think, which is easing off, the memories are easing off as we see some of the guys who had captive foundries, in-house manufacturing for some of the higher value parts, it's easing off, because what people, by the way, are also doing is that the same amount of wafers of a certain technology which were available were repurposed to produce chips with higher average selling prices versus chips with lower selling prices. So those are the categories where we have had the maximum grief. And unfortunately, in our situation, even if you secure 999 components and, one is missing, you could potentially have a imbalance inventory and not able to ship out. The overall outlook that we have heard from all the semiconductor suppliers is that towards later part of this calendar year, things will start to ease out. So what that means is that if you place an order on a chip supplier today, they may come back to you with a 52 weeks or 70 weeks lead time. But if you're going to place, but the chances of that order getting, executed in less than 52 weeks or 70 weeks will only be known as the year progresses. It could happen in Q1, it could happen in Q2, but if you're going to place orders in the month of November, December, you possibly will have a lead time coming down to, 20 weeks or, 26 weeks, which is, or 16 weeks, which is a normal situation. So that's how we see the situation, where today it is still, everybody knows this is the likely scenario, but nobody is committing. Later part of the year, we'll start seeing commitments of lower lead times from suppliers. And this is across the board again, as I can see that it's not a Tejas alone problem, but supply chain planning guys from different companies that we've been talking to are facing the same situation. If I were to kind of summarize something that Tejas could have done better, which we did not in the past, was really not just relying on the EMS suppliers to do all the detailed supply chain management. We took care of the A-class items, but the B-class and C-class, the ones which I just mentioned, are the ones which got us into a slower revenue rate. And that is basically probably our global competitors early on, essentially went into NS level of details and tried to do a better job of executing than we did.
Understood. So just to take this a step forward, for example, tomorrow all the power chip scenario or TSMC, Samsung supply constraints are lifted, things are back to normal. Out of the 1,100 crore of order book which you have right now, plus the slow business which is there, what is the current capacity in terms of your own delivery which you can do on a quarterly basis? Is this something which is constrained by a revenue run rate of maybe 300 crore or 400 crore? Is there a constraint from Tejas side which can put a cap there? And I'm talking about right now.
Absolutely not. For the next four quarters, if we can get all the components that we need and all the orders which you have placed come in, we can do all the numbers that you mentioned without any problems at all. What we are also doing, which I alluded to in my commentary and I can maybe elaborate a little bit more, is that we are expanding our EMS base also in terms of production capacity in anticipation for scaling up our revenue base from significantly larger numbers than what we are today. So we have all of those things also lined up. So I would say that today, in terms of scaling up our revenues from where we are to much larger numbers, I don't think there is any bottleneck. The only bottleneck is the availability of components. The EMS capacity is there. The production box build capacity is available. We do not see any internal hindrance from a Tejas perspective. We don't have any cash flow issues in terms of not being able to place large orders. So in that sense, the only thing which is holding us back is a balanced list of components that we need to complete the orders.
Sure. And one final question. This quarter, was there any tier one vendor in US or Europe where you started either trialing out or kind of working your way in, given that the supply scenario is limited, so maybe the time can be utilized to forge new relationships?
Nothing major internationally. We did ship to one of the business that we had won last quarter, so we shipped that to that customer to seed that stuff in Europe to hopefully get that network rolled out. But to be honest, no, we did not have any specific opportunity into a tier one internationally where we could divert some of our available material and get a win there. But the existing accounts which we have, we are continuing to at least make sure that their critical deliveries are done, and we don't get into a situation where our lack of deliveries hurts our reputation or our growth in the account. I mean, clearly we can get more business, but we're not losing business because we didn't supply per se.
Understood. Thanks a lot for taking my questions.
Thank you, Mukul. Maybe since we're at the end of the hour, we can take one last question, please.
Sure. Thank you. The last question will be from the line of Vimal Gohil from Alchemy Capital. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thank you for the sir, I have two questions. Just firstly, a clarification on Sankhya. Are the numbers getting reflected in this particular quarter, and what is the contribution if yes? That is question number one. And so the second question is, you spoke about a lot of changes in the process and the systems in order to better track our supply chain system. Sir, will this have where will this sort of reflect? Will this get reflected more in terms of asset investment or the other balance sheet, or will this get reflected in our P&L, wherein we have in terms of more investments which have which will pass through into the P&L. So these are my two questions.
Yeah, certainly. Sankhya Labs, there is no contribution of Sankhya because as of July 1 is when we acquired the 63% stake. So starting from this quarter onwards, we will be seeing, we'll be consolidating the numbers from Sankhya into our books. So that's part one of your question. Part two of your question, what is the impact and what is the place where you'll see the benefit of the changes in the processes and systems are coming? That should be in the top line. We should be able to do a lot more revenues than we have been able to do in the past couple of quarters. Secondly, we will continue with the asset-like model. So there is no intention for us to change, put a big factory and, you know, produce everything ourselves. What we are doing is because we have to scale up our manufacturing and capacity, we have signed up new OEM partners, new EMS partners, who could be producing on behalf of us compared to the current ones that we have. So in that sense, the measure of our internal processes systems is really the revenue impact that we should be able to see better as we go forward. But definitely there will be no additional asset build-up. Also, by the way, I just wanted to clarify, just in case it wasn't clear, that even though we'll be applying for a much higher incentive amount and investment commitment for the under the design link PLI scheme, we will not be making any artificial investments in terms of hard capex again. So the strategy of manufacturing will still be same. It still be asset-like model, except that whatever we are investing in manpower, R&D cost, will now be counted towards capital investment, which will give us a bigger envelope in terms of the incremental sales revenues on which we'll get the PLI incentive. So in that sense, no fundamental change in the business model except just a better management of the model. And in fact, it was also a little bit, surprise to us because when the lead time in the industry for components was 12 to 16 weeks, our EMS model just worked fine. I mean, the process systems were just okay. But as those lead times changed, we really did not react to, getting into the second and third level details of our EMS in terms of what were they doing with our orders, how were they ordering, because if they were waiting for the longest lead time to order because everybody is just in time and trying to optimize their inventory, naturally, if you were able to pull in those components, we were not getting the benefit of that. And we are still seeing a lot of, slip-ups from their side or decommits from their side. So I just feel that, some stuff which we did not execute well, we have figured out where we are weak and we are trying to, strengthen those areas. The results of that should start seeing in the coming quarters onwards.
Thank you, sir. So I just have one more question, if I may.
Sure. I mean, we have just another minute, so why not?
Yeah. So, just in terms of risk, what we understand is that the telecom equipment is a pretty sticky business. I mean, when we are actually supplying to a customer, that customer probably stays with us for a fairly long period of time because we have the best knowledge of the product. The service aspect is also taken care of by us. Given the fact that, we have been facing this supply component shortage and these delivery challenges, are we risking losing market share to peers who have direct control of manufacturing in their hands? And if that is the case, then how are we going to sort of recoup the lost market share? Because the customers, once they select a vendor, it tends to be sticky in our industry. Correct me if I'm wrong, sir. Thank you.
No. So first part is absolutely right that ours is a very sticky business. So in that sense, as I mentioned earlier, that we've not lost any account, we've not lost any order in that sense. Coming back to your second part, that compared to competitors who are doing this in-house manufacturing, I don't think we have any competitors globally now, except if I take the Chinese out, who do in-house manufacturing. So even all our global competitors follow almost the same model as us, which is outsourced to EMS companies for, doing manufacturing, et cetera, et cetera. What they could have done, which is a possibility, is that they manage the supply chain through their EMSs much better than what we did. A, because of their volume buying power. B, maybe they have got this learning experience in some previous cycles of component shortages, which we are getting it for the first time here. So in that sense, they may have done a better job of executing. However, when we look at new wins and new supplies from even our global competitors, their lead time commitment for unforecasted orders is no different than ours. So in that sense, I wouldn't say that we are losing any ground to someone and he has occupied the land and we don't have an opportunity to get the land back. The more likely scenario is that we had a certain market share in an account, which we would have in the normal course increased, because we always increase market share in our accounts. Because of the supply chain shortages, maybe we are, you know, stuck at the same market share that we were before. So what we are trying to do in this scenario is that we are winning new applications in the same customer. So for example, let's say operator A in India was deploying us in, you know, X and Y part of the network. We are saying, hey, why not in the Z part of the network? And that process of qualification, getting selected, could be a 6-month cycle. And we are completing all of those cycles to win new applications into existing accounts. So by the time the supply chain situation, you know, eases off, we can have another portion of their market share, which we are otherwise not getting. So I would say we've not lost anything. We've been holding tight. Probably we've not gained market share, which we could have. But this is something which we just have to deal with, given where we are.
Fair enough, sir. Thank you so much. And all the very best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Due to time constraints, we have reached the end of question and answer session. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Sanjay Nayak for closing comments.
Thank you, everybody. First of all, we had a good set of questions, and I'm hoping that we were able to give you a better view of our business. Clearly, I mean, we have been going through the supply chain challenges for quite some time, and it's not very good that we again had a quarter which was not to the level that we had internally planned for. But having said that, we understand what the challenges are, what issues are, and we are working to the best of our abilities to fix those. And we hope to see a good result, at least on the supply chain side, in the coming quarters. The second thing I want to highlight is the R&D investments, especially on the wireless side, that we've been making. We are very confident of the output of those investments turning in the form of potentially large orders. And we believe that those things will also start showing in the results as the year progresses. And then the last part I want to kind of mention, which is in the context of the question someone asked right at the beginning, that as a part of the Tata Group company, we have a fairly good idea of what the strategy of the company is, what are the actions we need to take. We have started to execute on that, and we should see results coming out. But the vision and ambition is very large, and part of the whole partnership with Tata to essentially accelerate that, and we are confident that we are making the progress in the right direction. So that's how I would summarize where we are today. And thank you again for being patient in terms of hearing our challenges, and look forward to better outcomes from whatever we are doing in the times to come. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Tejas Networks, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.